From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Dan Revie, senior Washington correspondent for I-24 News, and Linda Feldman, Washington bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. Our moderator is CBS radio contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome, everyone. Here are the issues. The months-long investigation conducted by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller has concluded. U.S. Attorney General William Barr released a summary of the Mueller report that had a politically emboldened President Donald Trump claiming exoneration of collusion and obstruction of justice claims and left Democrats looking for answers that may lie in the report itself. President Donald Trump signed a proclamation recognizing Israel's sovereign right over the Golan Heights. We examine the short-term and long-term impact of the decision. And as a Brexit plan continues to elude lawmakers in the UK and in Europe, British Prime Minister Theresa May told Tory MPs that she will quit once the UK has formally exited the European Union. Let's start with the Mueller report. This was the largest news we've had for some time in a city that has no shortage of news. This is global news, obviously. I'll start with you, Linda. What happened last Friday?
What happened last Friday was that the Mueller report, the report of the special counsel investigating Russian interference in the 2016 election and possible collusion with the Russians by Donald Trump and his associates, was finally handed in. So after months and months and months, after almost 2 years of investigation by just Mueller, and he picked up an existing investigation, then we had to wait the weekend. We knew that Attorney General Barr was going to give us some clues, give us some top-line conclusions. That happened on late Sunday afternoon, and no collusion was the top-line conclusion on that, and no conclusion on the issue of obstruction of justice by the president. But furthermore, it explicitly stated in William Barr's letter that there was no exoneration, a point that Donald Trump has aggressively ignored ever since.
Aggressively ignored. Dan, I'll just let you.
Isn't it something that this former FBI director, Robert Mueller, after 22 months of work as a special counsel, couldn't reach a conclusion as to whether Donald Trump or people close to him had obstructed justice? Mueller had more facts than anyone else. Mm-hmm. Now, the first part, to be frank, to Democrats was kind of disappointing. Mueller concluded that there was not enough evidence of collusion to prosecute anybody, some conspiracy of the Trump campaign working with Russians who had hacked into the 2016 campaign and were trying to affect it. And then the second part, did President Trump try to obstruct justice? Mueller couldn't reach a conclusion. I mean, that's why you have an independent counsel, so you'd have a decision by someone who's not directly employed by the president. I thought that was really disappointing.
It's really interesting to me. It's almost like awarding the Academy Awards based on the opinion of a critic rather than actually seeing the movie. Who has actually seen the report? No one's seen the report.
Very few people.
Yet.
So it's there are the people in the Justice Department, people obviously connected to Mueller and to William Barr, including Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who's a key player in all this. But the White House hasn't seen it. Members of Congress haven't seen it. So the early impact really knocked the wind out of Democrats, because a lot of Democrats were counting on this report to bolster their case that the president should be impeached. But the chance of impeachment declined dramatically.
Based on what we have from this four-page letter,
which people have counted the number of words that quote directly from Robert Mueller, and it's about 74 words.
Whereas we've learned that the whole Mueller report is at least 300 pages. It's 700, though, again, it's not been officially said.
Right.
So there's hundreds of pages. Now, does everyone think that Congress will see it? And if Congress sees it, the public will see it? It sounds like yes, in a few weeks.
But now we've entered this new phase of speculation. What was so torturous about the 22-month investigation was all the speculation. The Mueller investigation was almost completely leak-proof operation, which is extraordinary for Washington.
Indeed.
And cable channels were just speculating nonstop over what they were finding and what they might conclude. Now we've entered a new phase of speculation. What is actually in the Mueller report? What kind of details might come out? So I, again, caution people to think that maybe William Barr is hiding something explosive in there that he didn't put in his letter to Congress. Because William Barr knows that if not the entire report, a lot of it is going to be made public. And what they're doing right now is redacting, i.e. blocking information that could be classified or could be part of an ongoing investigation.
Yes, things that are involved in grand jury testimony.
Exactly. So we've got federal and state cases involving the president still underway. Robert Mueller handed off aspects of his investigation to other departments of the Justice Department. So this is far from over.
So there could be information in there that's damaging to Donald Trump and his reelection hopes for next year. Damaging. But it'll be people's opinions. It's pretty clear now that the Justice Department isn't going to prosecute, certainly not Donald Trump or members of his family.
Right.
Congress could still impeach the president, but that seems unlikely, again, because there's an election next year. So Democrats in general in this town are saying, if we want to get rid of Donald Trump, we have to defeat him next year in the November election.
Right.
I think that's become a new focus.
I want to bring you back on that one, Dan, because you're saying that the political sentiment at this time is that impeachment is off the table. To turn back to a time when we last had impeachment, well, not the last time, but with Richard Nixon, it wasn't the special prosecutor that came up with the evidence that led to his coming impeachment and his resignation. It was the House Judiciary Committee and John Dean's testimony to that committee. Even though the summary of what we know about this report so far seems to clear the president of criminal prosecution, is there really a burden on the Democrats now to pull away from impeachment hearings or to press forward based on the information that seems to be overwhelming in the case that there was some obstruction, some inappropriate behavior for a president?
Well, that's why we're waiting for the full report with some redactions, some paragraphs, maybe pages blacked out, and then congressional Democrats feel they'd have something to go on, either to criticize Trump or, okay, maybe to start some impeachment hearings in the House of Representatives. But I'm hearing from Democrats mostly, let's turn to the campaign. Let's gather as much evidence, not just of his alleged criminality, but just in general, his behavior. How is the economy really doing? How is he really performing? How has he shaken up the international scene just by his behavior? In other words, Democrats are saying, let's try to beat him.
And let's turn to that, Linda. So the president, an emboldened President Trump, has turned his sights on policy issues with what he feels is his mandate now to press forward. And he's turned his sights on health care. And he said that the Republican Party, his party, is going to be the party of health care. He's calling on the courts to overturn and strike down the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, that provides health care options for millions of people. This is a policy that brought the House Democrats into power in the last election. Is this political gold or political suicide?
So the initial take by not just reporters, but by Republicans, some Republicans, is that this is political suicide, that they know that the Democrats rode that issue to a wave election last November to retake control of the House and retake a lot of governorships. Democrats did really well based on that issue. The Affordable Care Act has been growing in popularity over time, which is typically what happens with social safety net programs like Social Security and Medicare.
Right.
I mean, imagine campaigning on removing Medicare and Social Security from American life. That is never going to happen. And the Affordable Care Act, while not really popular, is growing in popularity.
Yep.
And in fact, there's been reporting on people who advise the president, some saying, yes, do this on health care, go for the total repeal of the ACA, and others saying, this is political suicide, and you're handing the Democrats a gift. The Democrats are gleeful that the president has done this. And in his first post-Mueller rally in Michigan, I was interested to see what he would say about health care. And indeed, he really pounded hard on that issue. I'm going to be the president of health care. But guess what? He doesn't have a plan, and neither do the Republicans. So if this court case goes to the Supreme Court and the Supreme Court completely wipes out Obamacare, we're left with nothing. And this is on President Trump if that happens.
Well, the United States would return to what had been before 2010, which is a free market when it comes to things that insurance companies can sell. Health coverage, medical coverage, you can buy it. It could be too expensive.
No protection for pre-existing conditions.
No rules as to what the insurance companies have to include in their policies.
Right.
So the Obamacare or ACA breakthrough 9 years ago was requiring every health insurance policy in the United States has to allow people with pre-existing conditions to buy it and be covered. Wow. And the insurance companies cannot throw people off. And there are even other rules as well, protecting men and women from not having discriminatory premiums they need to pay. Really big changes. When Republicans criticize it, they say there's too much government control, too much in the way of regulation. Therefore, it becomes inefficient and wasteful. And look, premiums are rising. The Democrats say premiums were rising anyway.
Right. Obamacare, rising at a slower rate.
Obamacare appears to have slowed down what the increase would have been, but still in the United States, healthcare costs a lot more than it does in other countries. Mm-hmm. So Trump says we're going to have better health care. It's going to be great health care. He doesn't have a plan. I think he's pushing his own party's experts to come up with a plan and quickly.
We do have a stop the clock on this segment. We'll be back with more Issues on the News.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. Did you know that you can download our program? It's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, go ahead and check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also, visit us on Facebook, then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel, Dan Revive, Senior Washington Correspondent for I-24 News, and Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor. Our moderator is CBS Radio Contributor Michael Williams.
Welcome back. In a move that overturns decades of U.S. foreign policy, President Trump signed a proclamation officially recognizing Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights, which it captured from Syria in 1967 and has been occupied ever since. Dan, a resident expert on this, so I'm going to turn to you first.
Well, simply put, what Donald Trump did was show that he is a great friend of Israel's current Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. Netanyahu was visiting Washington. That was this past weekend for the AIPAC conference. That's the big pro-Israel lobby. 20,000 Americans were there at the convention. And the timing just seemed perfect for Netanyahu because he has an election campaign back home in Israel. Israelis will be voting April 9th. It looks to me like President Trump must have said, what can I do for my friend Benjamin Netanyahu? Let's see. The Golan Heights, captured from Syria in 67. No one's really talking about who permanently owns it, but hey, I'm going to tear up all precedent and I'm going to issue a presidential proclamation, which is what he did. And Netanyahu was absolutely thrilled. And it does seem to have increased Netanyahu's chances of being elected back home, because Netanyahu's main message to voters there on this is, I have the best friendship ever with the United States, and the U.S. is the most valuable ally for Israel. So Israeli voters feel that they want a close connection. And that's what it's about. It's not going to change anything in the Golan Heights. Syria wasn't making any push to recapture it right now. Syria has been torn apart by a civil war for 8 years. It was just an issue, just something that would help Netanyahu in the election campaign there.
So did that issue arise, and did this solution arise from, in your opinion, the White House, from the State Department, or from Netanyahu
the
himself?
State Department would have opposed it for sure. Veteran diplomats don't want to do things like that, which appear to even violate international law. After World War II, there are international conventions that say it is illegal to acquire territory by force. The Israelis and the American Secretary of State Mike Pompeo this past week said, let's look at that. If you acquire territory in a defensive war, then it's okay. So that's a U.S.-Israeli interpretation, if you will. They say it was a defensive war back in 1967.
Linda, your take on this?
I look at this within the international context. It strikes me as, first of all, destabilizing for the region. I mean, that to make this proclamation, which is, I think, more symbolic than anything, but just because the United Nations opposes it. I'm thinking about Russia and Vladimir Putin's move in 2014 to grab Crimea. This, to me, is a wink from Donald Trump to Vladimir Putin in Moscow that, you're good on Crimea. And let's just see how that plays out. There are still sanctions, U.S. sanctions and European sanctions on Russia over this taking of territory. Do those sanctions at some point disappear? We'll see.
We will see. And yet, I think you pointed to a very important long-term ramification of this in terms of other conflicts that are going on in the world. If you claim a defensive position and take land, are you then justified in doing that? What's been the response, the verbal response, from other nations and from multinational organizations?
Rejecting what President Trump did, just saying that it was the act of one man and the European Union and the United Nations and, of course, the Arab countries. All plan on ignoring it. Again, it doesn't make much of a difference who lives on the Golan Heights.
Not in a practical sense, it does
not a lot of people, Israelis, we call settlers there. By the way, Palestinian Arabs don't live in the Golan Heights. There's some people of the Druze ethnicity who live there. They live in both Syria and Israel. They speak Arabic. Some feel loyal toward Syria. Some feel loyal toward Israel. In short, the president's proclamation simply strengthens Netanyahu in the Israeli election campaign. And that's it. By the way, the State Department is redrawing its maps. Its map showing the state of Israel will show the West Bank as disputed territory, Gaza Strip disputed territory now held by Hamas, the Golan Heights, that will be included in Israel from a U.S. point of view.
And there's no way that President Trump will make some move on the West Bank in a similar vein, right?
Well, there are, if you will, right-wing Israelis, including settlers in the West Bank, who say maybe an Israeli government will annex the West Bank and tell the Palestinian Arabs, you can live here if you want to, but we're not giving you citizenship. Right. And the U.S., the great friend Donald Trump, will say, that's fine. And so right-wing Israelis do have high hopes of that. Mike Pompeo said, no, it's not the same. The West Bank isn't the same because the U.S. is going to put out a peace plan proposed for Palestinians and Israelis supposedly within a few months, and we'll have other ideas for the West Bank. That's what U.S. officials said.
The one person I haven't heard from is the head of the White House's negotiations on the Middle East peace, Jared Kushner. And I wonder if, maybe he knows something about this, if he's made any sort of statement on this, has a position on this, and if he thought that it would help Middle East peace, even theoretically, to reverse this policy, would he advocate for that?
You know, I honestly don't know. I mean, Jared Kushner is probably having a big sigh of relief that was not indicted or somehow implicated. Although we don't know. We haven't seen the Mueller report.
In the Barr summary, he's not.
Right, in the Barr summary, he's not. We'll all do a search on Kushner when we get to see the full or redacted version of the Mueller report. But Jared Kushner is often a sort of silent wingman of the president, also close to Netanyahu. I mean, famously, as a child, had to give up his bedroom when their friend Bibi was visiting.
Well, a couple of things, if I may, because at the AIPAC conference, there was a little revelation of U.S. policy hopes. The American ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, spoke there, and he said, look what President Trump has now done. As Israel's best friend ever, recognizing the Golan Heights as part of Israel, it would be a real shame in the future if Israelis didn't seize this opportunity for peace. There will be a peace proposal from Jared Kushner and his partner in the Trump White House. That's Jason Greenblatt. So Kushner and Greenblatt will have a plan. Ambassador Friedman says it'll be a real shame if Israelis don't embrace something coming from your true friends. Yeah. There was an indication that Trump will expect something in return, that Israel say yes to the plan, whatever it may be. And by the way, Jason Greenblatt, who works with Kushner on the secretive peace plan, has been tweeting from time to time how evil Hamas is in the Gaza Strip, what a good friend to Israel's security the United States is. And so Greenblatt from time to time also sends that message, we're on Israel's side. So let's see what the U.S. expects in the future.
Outstanding. Thank you for that, Dan. I knew you would have a few things to say on that point. Let's move to our final point, which is Theresa May pledging to step down. She offered to step down after a deal for exiting the European Union is reached, essentially offering a deal to offer up her own head in exchange for her party's support for exit. I think it's very interesting who she reported this to, who she made this statement to, which is sort of a closed committee of her own backbenchers, of her own party. It wasn't sort of a public announcement. It was in a closed session, reportedly, that she made this announcement.
I think we're in the end days of the Theresa May administration, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
She desperately wants to have as smooth as possible a Brexit. And her party, her allies, her opponents are not making this easy for her. So by offering to resign if they will pass her plan, that eases the way for her departure. I think no matter what happens, her days are numbered. She will be out. And this is important because the person who might replace her could be a more hardline pro-Brexit person who will have a lot of sway over the details. And it's always in the details how this takes place. I mean, her plan would maintain customs and trade arrangements with the European Union at least until the end of 2020, and with an ultimate eye toward cutting those ties. But there's a lot of detail in there that has to be worked out.
A lot of detail, Dan.
How could Theresa May not resign? I mean, she's really not succeeded in making this a smooth process. Now, 3 years ago, she wasn't prime minister. When the British people voted to leave the European Union, David Cameron was the Conservative prime minister. He was so disappointed by the outcome, Brits want to leave the EU, that he resigned. Theresa May became the PM. They called an election, and she did not win a majority. The Conservatives don't have their own majority. They depend on a small party in Northern Ireland for support. So this points the way, obviously, I think, to another general election in Britain. And so an even bigger change than who's going to be the next Conservative PM and handling Brexit, you could have the Labour Party leader, Jeremy Corbyn, who's an avowed socialist, become the new Prime Minister of Britain. And who knows what the trade relationships and other relationships will be with Europe and with the United States. Corbyn is not considered a warm friend of the U.S., and so there's a lot that's important here in U.S.-British relations.
Is there a deal that is going to get anything other than a hard Brexit from Europe?
Yeah, I mean, having any deal at all means that the European Union and the United Kingdom, Britain, have agreed on what will the levels of tariffs and customs be for all sorts of goods. How will you handle the border between the Republic of Ireland, a separate country which is part of the EU, and Northern Ireland, on the same island, but part of the United Kingdom? How are you going to handle that border? Theresa May came up with several ideas. The European Union went along with what was called the backstop on the border. But Parliament, again and again, wouldn't go for it. The other night, Parliament voted on 8 different alternatives. One of them, in fact, was to call another national referendum. Every single alternative was voted down. It's a big mess, and in a parliamentary system, really, how can Theresa May survive?
Is there any chance for another referendum? And would that be the savior of this political situation, or would it be the absolute end of democracy in the UK?
So I think you have to put the word democracy in quotes here. If you have a second referendum, that really would make everybody wonder. I know this is increasingly popular option. You've had big demonstrations, people signing petitions. The original Brexit vote passed by a slim margin. But they voted for it.
Wouldn't it be true democracy to run again?
You can't just keep having elections or referenda until you get the result you want. It's almost like, I mean, this, and I bring this back to the United States. Our countries are both in turmoil. I would say that the UK is in bigger turmoil than we are.
Which is saying something.
But it goes to this question in the United States of people who just can't stand Donald Trump and think he's awful and authoritarian, and they want to get him out as soon as possible. He is the duly elected President of the United States. And the way to get him out of office is to vote him out through elections. So they had Brexit 3 years ago. They had the Brexit vote. The voters of the UK voted to leave the EU. You could have another referendum. I honestly don't think that's going to happen. But to me, that would just really diminish the institution of democracy by doing it again. I mean, where do you get a do-over? It would be like having a do-over American presidential election.
Okay, so instead, I think it's more likely there'll be a general election.
Right.
And that's where maybe Corbyn and Labour will take over, and then they'll decide what to do. Because when you have a parliamentary majority, you can just plain decide.
That's right.
Part of May's problem has been that the Conservatives don't really have their own full majority.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Panelists, thanks so much for making a very, very large news week both enjoyable and understandable. My thanks to Dan Revive, senior Washington correspondent for I-24 News, and Linda Feldman, Washington bureau chief for the Christian Science Monitor. The program is produced by Patrice Martin. Our engineer is Justin Thwaites. And I'm Michael Williams. Thanks for listening.